want to explain something from last week's Sedra that has connection to a few of the Sedras, because they all have to do with the Mishkan and with Shabbos. We know that the building of the Mishkan does not take precedence over Shabbos. You're not allowed to build the Mishkan on Shabbos. And in fact, the malachos that are prohibited on Shabbos, we learn from the Mishkan. Those malachos that went into building the Mishkan during the week are the malachos that are also to do on Shabbos, the 39 malachos. On the other hand, when it comes to using the Mishkan, lighting the menorah, lighting the fires on the mizbeach, the altar, to burn the sacrifices, bringing the levona that's burnt on the shulchan every Shabbos, all of that supersedes Shabbos. We make fires, we burn, right, and that does supersede the Shabbos. Why? Why does the actual construction of the Mishkan not supersede Shabbos, whereas the maintenance or the using of the Mishkan does? So I want to say the following. In this world, there are two kinds of Kedusha. There are two kinds that we're going to speak about. One is called Kedushas Makom. Places can be holy. They're holy places. Har Sinai became holy when HaKadosh Baruch Hu devolved His Shechina on there and gave the Torah. The Beis HaMikdash is a holy place. The Mishkan was a holy place. There is Kedushas Makom. And there's also Kedushas Zman. There are times that are holy. Shabbos, Yom Tov, and so on. When we analyze the holiness of each of these, there's a reason to suppose that the Kedusha of time is greater than the Kedusha of place. The reason being the following. Place really doesn't exist except relevant to this world. Because there is no place. Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ein HaOlam, Mekomo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, El HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mekomo Shel Olam. God is the only place. HaMakom, Yenachem Yisrael. There is no place. God, Kibiyachol, was Mitzamtzein. He contracted His, whatever, His essence, and He left a place for this world to exist. But it's really only a place vis-a-vis our creation, vis-a-vis our relationship to it. But in essence, absolute truth, there is no place. And that's why we have this concept that is constantly what Chazal called Ratzov Vashov, runs back and forth from one idea to another, from the absolute to the relative. And that is, we say, Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is removed. He's not anywhere. He's not contained with any place. He's totally removed from any concept of place. And yet, Molei Chol HaAretz Kevodo. We say that the entire world is filled with His glory. That means that He is in a place. And then we say, Baruch Hash Baruch Kevod Hashem Nimkomo, from His place. And then we say, Ayei Mekom Kevodo. Where is His place? So we constantly go back and forth from the absolute, that really there is no place. Kadosh Baruch Hu is the only place, and that there is place. So Makom is really relegated to this world. And the next world is not a Makom, it's a completely different kind of place, spiritual, not the kind of place, not the kind of world that we understand over here. On the other hand, time, the Ramchal says, the Rabbanim Shem created two times. The time for fulfilling the mitzvahs and the time for getting the reward. But it's all one time. Not a different time. It's in this world the time appears to be present, past, future, broken into small components. Yor Olam Haba is called Yom Shekulo Aruch. The time that's totally long. And I think it's Rabbi Yisrael Salanter who explains it the following way. Maybe the Alter from Kelim. Maybe it's Simcha Zissel. And I don't remember now. One of them says, the idea is the following. In this world, time is made up of small portions of time that collect to become larger portions. Seconds make minutes, and minutes make hours, and hours make days, and so on. In Olam Haba, every second is eternal. But there's time. There's a concept of time, but it's Yom Shekulo Aruch. Right? It's the Zman of Olam Haba. But that Zman has its source in this world. In this world, from the finite time that we have, we transform that into infinite time by doing the right things in this place so we can be Zoche to Olam Haba. And therefore, Kedushas HaMakom is relevant only to this world. That Makom doesn't exist in the world to come. But Kedushas Zman is relevant both to this world and to the next world. So therefore, Kedushas Zman is a stronger Kedusha than Kedushas Makom. Therefore, the actual building of the Mishkan was Kedushas Makom, to build it and to sanctify the place where it was constructed. That's Kedushas Makom. Shabbos is Kedushas Zman. Which one takes precedence of the other? Kedushas Zman takes precedence over Kedushas Makom. Therefore, we don't build the Mishkan on Shabbos, because that would be creating Kedushas Makom and violating Kedushas Zman. Kedushas Zman is more important than Kedushas Makom. On the other hand, use of the Mishkan is time. All of the things that we do in the Mishkan on Shabbos is because it says b'moado, in its appointed time. That is the idea. We light the menorah in a special time. And not only in a special time, but it takes that time and makes it eternal. Makes it consistent, constant. All of those things are tamid. Ner tamid, carbon tamid, lechem lefonite tamid. They're all tamids. Consistent, constant. We take finite time and we use it in a way that becomes sanctified and elevated to be infinite time, to be something that is constant and consistent and already a throwback, an echo of the world to come. And therefore, the lighting of the menorah, the using of the shulchan, the making of sacrifices is all both a time component and a place component, place object. They're objects, but we are using them in a time reference. So they have two Kedushas. They have Kedushas HaMakom, Kedushas the object Kedusha, and Kedushas Zman. So that supersedes Shabbos, which is only Kedushas Zman. So therefore the use of the Mishkan takes precedence over Shabbos, because it is both Kedushas HaMakom and Kedushas Zman. Whereas the actual construction of the Mishkan is only Kedushas Zman, that does not take precedence over Shabbos, which is only Kedushas HaMakom. Shabbos is Kedushas Zman. Now based on this, before we go on to this, we just touched the surface over here. I want to explain to you a Gemara that I've explained in a similar way in the past, but now it takes on at least a little different perspective. There's a Gemara in Brachas. The Gemara says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu to build the Mishkan, he told him first to build the Mishkan, the environs of the Mishkan, and then the Kalim, then the various vessels. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he told Bezalel, he changed it around. And he told him first to make the vessels, and then to make the Mishkan. So Bezalel said, can't be. Lo kach min hago shalolam. That's not the way the world builds a house. You don't make your furniture first and then build your house. If I make the furniture first, where am I going to put the furniture? Must be that God told you first to make the Mishkan, and then to make the Kalim. Moshe says, you know what? B'tzel kel ha'isa v'yadata. You were in the shadow of God, and you knew. That's taka, what God told me. Two questions here. First of all, why did Moshe Rabbeinu switch it around? Two possibilities, and they both are not probable, or possible. One is, Moshe Rabbeinu made a mistake. God told him one thing, and he misunderstood, and he told B'tzel something else. Now, if B'tzel hadn't caught his mistake, that would have been disastrous. And that lends us to believe that Moshe Rabbeinu could have made mistakes in the rest of the Torah too. Maybe got it wrong. Right? Impossible. So that's out. That's not an option. What's the other option? He deceived Bezalel on purpose. What, to play around with the Torah, to try and trick him to see if he could guess the right thing. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't play around with the Torah either. Yeah?
I've been thinking about this a lot, and I thought that it might be that Moshe was talking about the purpose, the end purpose of the Mishkan, not from a builder's construction standpoint, but from a
purpose, right?
Yeah, the purpose, and that fits in with what you were saying, maybe
right?
With the time,
Okay, and Echanami, that is a reasonable answer. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he told the child, didn't really turn it around. He just told him first the purpose and then the means to get to that purpose. But Saul misunderstood and thought that he was telling him how to construct it. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, no, you were a Betzalel Kehel and you knew that I wasn't telling you how to construct it, I was only telling you the purpose. Possible. I have a better answer. Because there's another question here. And that question is, Tzel, shadow, is always a euphemism for doubt. Beyond the shadow of a doubt. In Hebrew we say the same thing. Tzilo shel safek. Whereas light is always a euphemism for clarity. Right? Borer kashemesh. Now if Moshe wanted to say, Betzalo, you understood clearly what God really said, what should he have said? Boor keil hayisa. You were in the light of God and you understood. Not that you were in the shadow of God. The shadow seems to imply something not clear. Not something clear. And Moshe is trying to say, Betzalo, hey, you were really understood as well. You got the clarity, then you should have been called Or keil, not Betzalo. What's the tzel have to do with
the
over here?
The shadow is nothing more than the origin.
What?
The shadow is nothing more than the source.
I understand, but the shadow is the or shielded and hidden. So that's why it's a euphemism for doubts. Right? The mice it is, it's a euphemism for doubt. Shadow of a doubt. Tzilo shall suffer. Or is always a euphemism for clarity. So why over here, we want to bring out clarity and we use tzel? We should use or. I want to say like this. When God gave the command to Moshe Rabbeinu to build the Mishkan, it was before the sin of the golden calf. He was up on Har Sinai. It was right away in the beginning of the 40 days that he was there learning with the Rabban Shem. The first thing he taught him was the Mishkan. It was before the sin of the golden calf. God knew there was going to be a sin of the golden calf because God knows everything. But God's knowledge does not conflict with people's free choice. How is that? We don't know. It's a miracle. Because God's knowledge is not our knowledge. And our knowledge would conflict with free choice. If we knew something was going to happen in the future, then either it's going to happen or we didn't know it. Couldn't be both. And therefore, if it has to happen, there's no free choice. And if it doesn't have to happen, then there's no knowledge. And by God, both things are true. God knows, and yet there's free choice. That means it doesn't have to happen, yet he knows for sure it's going to happen. How that those two things could work together, impossible to understand. It's beyond our comprehension, because God doesn't know things before they happen. God is knowledge. There's present, past, future don't exist by God. Right. And therefore, right. Therefore, what's it called? And therefore, the question is only a question according to our understanding of time and past and present and future. And in God's realm, it doesn't apply at all. But that's a fact. But if God tells people things that happen, then their knowledge does affect free choice. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't know there was going to be a sin of the golden calf. Therefore, before the sin of the golden calf, the purpose of the Mishkan was not to create a place where there would be God's presence felt. Kedushas Makom was not the main thing. Because it says in the end of Mishpatim, Bechol HaMakom Asher Askir Eshemi Ovo Elecho Virachticha. Before the sin of the golden calf, every single place in the world was the same as a Mishkan. Wherever person was, he could feel God's presence. You didn't need a Mishkan. So what did you need a Mishkan for? Once you had that tremendous feeling of God's presence anywhere in the world, you came to the Mishkan and you used the Kalim there to elevate that feeling, right? To give Kedushas Zman into the Kedushas Makom of everywhere in the world, and then to give that place even higher Kedusha. So which came first? The Kalim, and then the Mishkan. First you use the vessels, right? In order to elevate the place more than everywhere else in the world. But you didn't have to come to that place first to feel God's presence. You could feel God's presence anywhere. But once you felt God's presence anywhere, you came to that place, used the Kalim, and elevated that place to even a higher Kedushas Makom. But the first thing was the Kedushas Zman. That was the first primary thing, the use of the Kalim. Now, had God told Moshe Rabbeinu, I want you to build a Mishkan and then Kelim, meaning the Mishkan came first, before the Kelim, Moshe would have said, why? We don't need a Mishkan to feel your presence. Everywhere in the world we can feel God's presence. Must be that something's going to happen, and that's going to change. And he would have gotten tipped off that there was going to be a sin. And therefore the Ribbono Shel Olam on purpose made it obscure in the way that he commanded Moshe that he would misunderstand and think that first came the Kelim and then came the Mishkan. When in fact, that's not what God meant, but he didn't want Moshe Rabbeinu to know that. Because if he knew that, he would know there's going to be a sin. So he bedafka obscured it, said it in a very shady way, to make Moshe Rabbeinu think that first came the Kelim, then came the Mishkan. When Moshe gave the command to Bezalel, it was in this week's Seder, after the Chet HaEgel. Bezalel already knew, Moshe knew there was a sin of the golden calf. So when Bezalel got what Moshe thought was the command, because God wanted him to think that, first Kelim and then Mishkan, Bezalel said, Lo kach min hago shel olam. That's not the way the world functions now. After the sin of the golden calf, we need the Mishkan first, that people should feel a presence of God, and then they can use the Kelim. First you need the Kedushas Makom, because the Makom, Kedushas Makom doesn't exist everywhere in the world. You need to first create it here. Then we need the Kelim. Moshe says, you know what? Now looking back, that's what God said to me. But he didn't want me to know that, because it was before the sin of the golden calf, so he bedafka shaded it for me. And therefore, he said it to me in a very obscure, doubtful way. But Sale Kale, you were able to penetrate that sale and understand that God said it to me in a shaded way on purpose in order that I shouldn't understand then, but really, this is what he really meant. That's what it means. That's why he's called Bitzal. Because he was able to understand that God shaded the truth from Moshe in order that he shouldn't know there was to be a sin of the golden calf. With that, you can understand something else. We just explained why the building of the Mishkan does not take precedence over Shabbos. Because the building of the Mishkan is Kedushas Makom, Shabbos is Kedushas Man, and Kedushas Man takes precedence over Kedushas Makom. But that's only after the sin of the golden calf that the major reason to build the Mishkan was Kedushas Makom. Before the sin of the golden calf, there was no need to build a Mishkan to create Kedushas Makom, because that Kedusha existed everywhere. So why was the main purpose of building the Mishkan to use the Kelim, which is Kedushas Man and Kedushas Makom? So before the Chet HaEgel, in last week's Seder and Kisisa, which comes first? The description of the Mishkan or Shabbos? The description of the Mishkan. And the end of Rishon is Shabbos. Right? In next week's Seder, in Vayakel, first comes Shabbos, and then a description of the Mishkan. Chazal learned from the fact that Shabbos precedes the Mishkan that the Mishkan's not Docha Shabbos. It would follow that if we only had Parshas Kisisa, it would be Docha Shabbos. Because we have the Mishkan and then Shabbos. Mishkan comes before Shabbos. So the Mishkan precedes and supersedes Shabbos. Why? Because before the sin of the golden calf, the major purpose of the erection of the Mishkan itself was not to create Kedushas Makom. It was to enable a place to use the Kelim to combine Kedushas Man and Kedushas Makom together. And therefore, the Mishkan, the building of the Mishkan, was Docha Shabbos. Now, Shenkin, after the Chet HaEgel, the main purpose of building the Mishkan was first to create Kedushas Makom. And that's not Docha Shabbos, which is Kedushas Man. Okay, now that we have that, you can understand why the main Kedusha of Klal Yisrael is related to Kedushas Zman and not to Kedushas Makom. Why? Mekadesh Yisrael, the Hazmani. The same way God is Mekadesh Zman, He's Mekadesh Klal Yisrael. Because Makom, the fact that there's a Kedushas Makom, it doesn't say, it says, the Asuli Mikdash V'Shochanti B'Socham. Not that the Kedusha will be in you, not necessarily in that place. But the Kedusha will go from the place to you. But Kedushas Hazman is the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael, is represented through the fact that we make time holy. Why? Because the Jewish people are eternal, and we're the same people in this world and the next world. Zman is the same thing this world and the next world. Makom is not the same. So therefore the main Kedusha of Klal Yisrael is reflected more in Kedushas Zman than in Kedushas Makom. And that's why the very first mitzvah that we were given, that set us aside as a people, was Kiddush HaChodesh, Kiddush HaZman, sanctifying time. Okay, now, you still with me? Okay, now we're going to the next level. In Kiddush HaZman, there are two kinds of Kiddushas. There's what's called Shmiras HaZman and Zechiras HaZman, or as they apply to Shabbos, Shomar V'Zachor B'Dibur Echad Nemru. Okay, what is this idea of Shmiras HaZman and Zechiras HaZman? Let's use it in regards to Shabbos specifically first, and then we'll see it applies maybe more, but in Shabbos you can see it better. We said that the Zman of this world, the Zman of the next world are really one, except in this world it appears to be finite, and in the next world that same finite time becomes infinite. For one day a week, the infinite time of Olam Haba descends into this finite world. And that is called Kedusha Shabbos, which is Me'ein Olam Haba. It's like the world to come. So a little bit of the world to come comes into this world, which is the truth is that the root, the seeds of Olam Haba are in this world. The finite time of this world can be transformed into infinite time, okay? And it has, there's already the infinite time hidden in this world. We just have to discover it. That's called Shmiras HaZman. That means there is an element of the world to come already in this world. If you discover it, uncover it, as long as you don't desecrate it, you protect it, it's there. There's an idea of Shabbos of recognizing the eternal time of Olam Haba that descends into this world for those 25 hours. And how do you see it? You don't have to create it. It's there. What you have to do is guard it that you don't desecrate it. Desecrating means, l'chalel means to make it a vacuum, to push it away. It's there. If you do malacha and treat it in a weekday fashion, then you take that Olam Haba and you push it away and you leave a vacuum. That's called Chilul Shabbos. That's the vacuum. Chalal means a vacuum. Empty space. You take the Shabbos and you evacuate it from the place. It's no longer there. You vacate that place from Shabbos. But there is a Kedusha Shabbos that is an echo of the world to come that comes into this world once a week. And if you shomer it, if you protect it and guard it, then what's it called? Then you'll be able to enjoy it and be influenced by it. Okay. Then there's a second thing. There's more you can do than that. Once you discover that kernel of the world to come that is inherent in this world, you can take the finite time of this world and transform it into something infinite. You can take the chol and make it into kodesh. And that's why you can add from chol to kodesh on Friday and from chol to kodesh on Motzei Shabbos. Because you're going to take the finite time and by using your connection to that infinite time that descends into this world on Shabbos, take the finite time and make it holy and make it infinite. That's the idea of Zechiras Yom HaShabbos. And that's why Zechiras Yom HaShabbos is the enjoyment of Shabbos. Eating, drinking, taking the physical things of this world and elevating them, sublimating them to be something more holy. That is taking this world and making it into the next world. Not guarding the next world, which happens to be clothed in this world, but taking the clothing of this world and transforming it also into an echo of the world to come. And that's why Zacharis Yom HaShabbos applies even during the week, not just on Shabbos. Shmira Shabbos only on Shabbos. But Zechira Shabbos is counting the days till Shabbos. Hayom Yom Rishon B'Shabbos, you're mekayim the mitzvah of Zacharis Yom HaShabbos. It's in the middle of the week. But the concept of Zechiras Yom HaShabbos is to take the finite time and to transform it into something infinite. That is Zechiras Yom HaShabbos. And therefore, this applies in general to things that have to do with time. There are 365 negative commandments in the Torah. Those are shmira. Those are things you have to guard not to do. Why 365 can negate the 365 days of the year, which is a solar year? As long as you guard the Olam Haba that exists in this year, there is in this world, there is an echo already of the world to come hidden in this world. All you have to do is make sure that you don't desecrate. Guard it. Don't do any one of those 365 negative things, and there you'll have, you don't do anything positive. Just don't desecrate that Olam Haba that exists in this world. That is the 365 negative commandments. The connected the solar year, which is basically this world, but hidden in this world, if you protect it and you don't do anything wrong, you have 365 chances to do something wrong. But if you don't do any of those things wrong, you transform the 365 solar year into the world to come. That's mitzvah lo sase. Whereas mitzvah sase are connected to the 248 parts of the body, that's the more active kind of kedusha, zman, where you take the finite time and you make it into kedusha. You don't just guard the kedusha that exists in the infinite time that's hidden in this world. You take the finite time and you transform it into something infinite. And that's what you do in the Mishkan with all those kelim. You make from finite time tamid, constant, consistent, ner tamid, carbon tamid, lechem lefanai tamid, and so on. Therefore, next stage up. This shamar aspect, the idea of guarding the kedushas hazman of olam haba, which is hidden in this world, okay, by not desecrating it, by not transgressing negative things that would, interfere with it and push it away, that's feminine. That's why Shabbos is referred to as the feminine in last week's Edra. Os he. The Shomru v'nei Yisrael as HaShabbos, Shmira Shabbos, Lasos as HaShabbos of Dorosom Risalam, Os he. Feminine. Mechaleleha mos yumas. Those that desecrate her. Shabbos is feminine. The feminine aspect of Shabbos is this idea of Shmira. Why? Because that is the role of a woman. The role of a woman is to create a framework in this world and protect it. What does a woman do with her husband? She protects him. She creates an environment where he'll learn Torah and her children will learn Torah. And she protects him from sin by creating an environment that's pure. So the woman, the nekeva, creates that in pure environment. And the Gemara says that. They're mishamrosa, michet, they protect us from sin. They send their husbands to learn Torah and their children to learn Torah. And they wait for them. They guard them till they come back from learning Torah. What? Right, okay, Enochanami. She creates that framework, that's the challah going around the chasm seven times. So, therefore, the shmira of Olam Haba that exists already in this world is more a feminine role. And therefore, a woman has a greater connection to the Olam Haba that already exists in this world, in this world. She already is connected into that Olam Haba in this world. Therefore, Chazal say, "Gedola haftacha shenemru lenashim yosem yanashim," that the promise that was made to women concerning Olam Haba is greater than the promise made to men. Women have a greater connection to Olam Haba because their connection already starts here. They're already connected to the Olam Haba, which is hidden in this world. All they have to do is guard it and protect it, and desecrated and not tainted. However, the zohar, the remembering part of Shabbos, that is more the zohar, the male, right? There, next week's Sefer, it says kol ha'oseh bo melacha, and that's why Friday night we refer to Shabbos as female. Shabbos morning refer to Shabbos as male, bo v'yanuchu vo Yisrael. The idea of the Zechiras Yom HaShabbos, like we explained, is to take the physical, finite time of this world and transform it into Olam Haba. Not to guard the Olam Haba that's hidden here, but to take the finite and transform it. That's a man's role. The man's role is to go out and conquer the world. You conquer it, you make it yours. You conquer it and you change it. You take the physical, the finite, and you turn it into something infinite and spiritual. That's why women are exempt from mitzvah saseh, shazman grama. Mitzvahs Aseh, positive mitzvahs, we say, are a relationship to Zohar. The 248 positive mitzvahs are parts of the body, the more active part of changing and conquering the finite and making it infinite. That's a man's role. Therefore, the mitzvahs that have to do specifically with time are even more. They're the mitzvahs that a person takes and transforms finite time into something more spiritual. That's why tefillin, tzitzis, Talmud Torah, those are all mitzvahs that have to do with time. What do we do with those mitzvahs? We take time and we change it into something more sublime, something more eternal. We wear tefillin as an oath, right? It's a sign that God is with us. We wear tzitzis to remember to do all the mitzvahs. These are things that transform finite time into... But that's not a woman's role. The woman's role is to protect the infinite time that's already hidden in this world and to connect into it. That's the shmiras hazman. That's why women are exempt from mitzvah saseh shazman grom. That's why also... there is a concept of Shabbos that comes before the 6 days and a concept of Shabbos that comes at the end of the 6 days. Where do we find this duality of Shabbos? Two ideas. Person's lost in the desert, the Gemara says, and he has amnesia. Wakes up one day, hit his head on a rock, wakes up, he doesn't know where he is, what day it is. What does he do vis-a-vis Shabbos? So the Gemara says like this, two opinions, what he does. One opinion is that the day that he realizes that he doesn't know what day it is, he makes that Shabbos. Makes that day Shabbos. He counts six more days and another Shabbos until he gets back his memory or he gets back to civilization and he finds out when Shabbos really is. Till then he keeps up this schedule of Shabbos, 6 days, another Shabbos. But he makes Shabbos the immediate day that he doesn't know what day it is. He makes that Shabbos. He davens Shabbos, he makes Kiddush, and so on. The other opinion says no. The day that he realizes he doesn't know what day it is, he makes that Sunday. He counts 6 days, and the seventh day he makes Shabbos. What's the logic behind both opinions, says the Gemara? Very simple. The second opinion is very simple. That patterns itself after the creation of the world. God created the world in 6 days, and the seventh day was Shabbos. So first you have 6 days, then you have Shabbos. Simple. What's the other opinion? The first man was created on Friday in the afternoon. That means his first full day on earth was Shabbos. So for him, Shabbos came first, and then 6 days. Not 6 days and then Shabbos. From God's perspective, we have 6 days and Shabbos. From man's perspective, we have Shabbos and then 6 days. The idea being the following. God said, I'm creating this world that through it you can unveil the world to come. But the world to come is already hidden in this world. So find it. Right? That is from God's standpoint. The idea of the 6 days leading up to Shabbos, because the 6 days are what's it called, are Shabbos is hidden. God created the light of Olam Haba, hid it in this world, or Zaruah Latzadik, the Or HaGonus, hidden in the Torah, and that light is hidden in this world. You have to discover it, and then you get Shabbos. Take your 6 days and discover that Shabbos. Man, on the other hand, came into this world. His job is to take Shabbos and to transform the rest of the week into Olam Haba. Not to just discover it, but to transform it, to make it. So first he comes to a Shabbos, and then he starts 6 days after that of transforming those 6 days into the Shabbos that he experienced to begin with. So the Zohar part of Shabbos, the Shabbos precedes the 6 days. In the Shomer part of Shabbos, the Shabbos comes after the 6 days. Next piece of this. So now we've established a lot of ideas about Kedushas Makom, Kedushas Man, and different kinds of Kedushas Man. Let's go to the sin of the golden calf. The sin of the golden calf started out as a sin in time. It was a distortion of time, of abusing time. How so? Moshe Rabbeinu said he was coming back in 40 days. The people anxiously counted the days when he'd come back. They got to day 40 and he wasn't back. Okay? Half the day went by, and Boshe Shmoshe Loretis Minahar. They didn't take any consideration that the first day didn't count because it didn't have the night before. Moshe went up in the morning. So the first day didn't count. You started counting the first full day that had a night and a day, so he wasn't scheduled to come back till the next day. So they jumped the gun by one day. And because they abused time, they got panicked because they didn't know when Moshe was going to come back, right? They decided that they needed something to take Moshe's place. And they made an eagle and they abused Kedushas Makom. By abusing the Kedusha of time, by abusing time, they came to abuse place too. And made an eagle to take Moshe's place. Mamash, Mamali Makom. A filler of Moshe's place. And they got too concerned with where Moshe was. He's up there, he's down here. What difference does it make? Place is very irrelevant. Right? What difference does it make if Moshe's up there, he's down here? Why do you panic? You need him right next to you? You need that place? But it came from an abuse of time. Now, I don't have any 100% proof to this. And I really didn't have a chance to really look into it a lot. But since I never came across anything, it hits me that maybe there is no source other than what I'm going to tell you. That's the following. What exactly did the Jewish people do during those 40 days that were waiting for Moshe to come back? They didn't get the Torah yet. All they got was Yeseres HaDibros. So they had no mitzvahs really to do yet, okay, except what they got in Marah. So they kept Shabbos every week in those 40 days. What else did they do? What were they doing exactly in those 40 days? It hit me that since it doesn't say anywhere in the Torah what they did, it's like a blank between when Moshe went up to get the Luchos, right, after the Aseres HaDibros, and when he came down with them, that nothing significant happened during that time, except they waited anxiously for Moshe to come back. That's all. Every day they got up, when's Moshe coming? When's Moshe coming? Can't wait for Moshe to get back. That's what they did. Otherwise, didn't do too much. They went around their daily activities. So what part of Zman were they fulfilling? Shmiras HaZman. They were waiting. They were guarding. When will Moshe come back? But they weren't doing Zechiras HaZman. They weren't doing anything positive to fill that time that they were waiting with anything positive. When you do that, that's where the abuse comes. When you're waiting and waiting, but you don't do anything to fill the time with anything positive, then the danger is that when the time comes and you don't see what you've been waiting for, that you panic and you go off the deep end. And I was thinking, that's why when we wait for Mashiach, it's not enough just to say, I can't wait for Mashiach to come and I'm waiting for Mashiach, because if you don't fill up the time with things that would pattern themselves, look, Mashiach's not here, but what am I waiting for Mashiach? So we'll be able to learn Torah more, be able to keep mitzvahs better. We won't be, what's it called, hindered from keeping mitzvahs by the nations of the world. Whatever it is. So if that's the case, let me live now as much as I can in that way before Mashiach comes. If that's what I'm waiting for, that's the ideal. So as much as I can do it now, the better it is. So let me try to learn as much Torah as I can. Let me try to do the mitzvahs in the best way I can. So then I'm anxiously waiting. When will come the time that I'll be able to learn more Torah and do more mitzvahs? But if I don't do any of that, I just spend all my time waiting for Mashiach, then at some point I'm going to get frustrated and say, well, I thought he was coming at this point and he didn't, and then there's going to be a panic and then people go off the deep end. So therefore you need both. You need the Shmiras HaZman, the waiting, Achakelo v'chol yom sheyavo, but to couple that with the Zechiras HaZman, okay, fine, you're waiting. So what are you doing about it? What are you doing to make your life now as similar to what you're waiting for, right? That when it comes, then it will be the perfection, but now at least do as much as you can on your own. So they didn't do anything. They were just waiting for Moshe. And then they, because they didn't do anything positive, they only had the Shmira when they were frustrated and Moshe didn't come when they thought he was supposed to come, they totally abused the Kedusha of Zman, and eventually abuse the Kedusha of Makom. And therefore, what was the Kapara for the Chetah Egel? The building of the Mishnah. The opposite. You came to abuse place because you abused time. Now you're going to have to build a place and make it Kodesh and use it for Kedushas Man. The opposite. You first abused time, and because of that you came to abuse place. Now build a place with a real kind of Kedusha and then use it to be Mekadesh Zman, which is the menorah and all the other things of Tumid. And that basically is our function in this world. To sanctify both place and time, with the emphasis on time, and to see to it that we fill time with both of these things. One is to guard and uncover the Kedusha that already is inherent in this world, and then to add and sanctify all the other things in the world, to take this world and transform it to the next world. To first recognize the next world which exists within this world, and then to take this world and transform it into the next world, and then to get the new makom, to take from this makom to the Olam Haba, to the new makom, where it's a different idea of Kedusha completely. Okay, if I haven't completely confused you, I think there's something to that. The just have a few minutes, let me just one more thing here. Yeah. Okay, let's. The Nisiyim. You can do this in 10 minutes, yeah. Even less than 10 minutes. It says in this week's Baha, Nisiyim Heviyu. Nisiyim is spelled without a Yud. It should have an extra Yud, doesn't have a Yud. So the rabbis say the Nisiyim sinned. Because when the word went out to donate to the Mishkan, they said, we'll wait and see what the people don't bring. And whatever they don't bring, we'll make up the deficit. And in the end, the Jewish people didn't bring quite a few things. Very expensive things. They didn't bring any of the precious stones. They didn't bring the oil for the menorah and for the Shemen HaMishcha. And they didn't bring the spices for the Ketores and the Shemen HaMishcha. And the Nesiim brought all of that. Yet the Nesiim were punished. Now seemingly they were punished because they weren't Zrizim. They didn't act, you know, with haste. Run in and give. Why did you wait until... But Lamaise, in the end, I wouldn't mind somebody saying, you know what, I'm not going to give you right now a donation. I'll go ask my yeshiva, right? But whatever you can't collect, I'll make up the deficit. I'm waiting for somebody like that. I would not take a yud out of his name. I put his name in big letters on a plaque, right? What was the big deal? So I think the answer, and why the yud is missing. So in one level, I wanted to say, if you look at the things that were given to the Mishkan, there were a total of 13 things, Rashi says. How you make 13 is difficult because there's really 15 things. So there's one way of calculating it, which I'm not going to go into now because we don't have the time, that there are taka 13, and you go by classification. In other words, all the stones were one thing. All the spices were one thing. Gold, silver, these things were all one category. If that's the case, then how many things did the 13 did the Nesiim bring? Three. Stones, oil, and spices. How many things didn't they bring? 10. Yeah. So the Yod is missing. That's on a simple level. I have a better answer. Why the Yod is missing and what their sin was. The Rabbi Akiva was asked by Turnus Rufus HaRosha, if your God loves poor people so much, why doesn't he support them? So Rabbi Akiva said, of course God could support the poor people. It's absurd to think that God gives extra to this guy, commands him to give to the poor guy. Cut out the middleman. Just give it directly to the poor man. Why do you have to give it to the rich man and command him to give it? It's not for the sake of the poor man. It's the sake of the rich man. God could support the poor person, but he wants the rich person to have the merit of doing it. So it's the stock is for the sake of the rich person, not for the poor person. And the Gemara says that. Yoser mimashe ha'asher osem ha'ani, more than the rich man does for the poor man does for the rich man. Because the rich man only gave him, gave the poor man money, which God could have given him. But the poor man gives the rich man a chance for a mitzvah, which God himself couldn't have given the rich man. We learned that from Ruth. Ruth said, the man that I did for today, what did she do? She took his crops. But I did for him, because he got the schus. I just got the tefuah. God could give me that. So the Chafetz Chaim says, when somebody supports Torah, So there are two ways of looking at supporting Torah. One is you're doing the Torah a favor, doing the yeshivas a favor. The other way is it's doing you a favor, because you're supporting yourself. And that was the hint of the badim of the Aron. The people who carried the Aron were carried by the Aron. They looked like they were doing the carrying, but the truth is they were being carried. And that's why the Chofetz Chaim says, the Torah is a tree of life to those who hold on to it for dear life and realize that they're supporting it, it's supporting them. But the people who think that they're supporting the Torah, they're fortunate, but it's not a tree of life to them. It's only a tree of life you realize that you're really supporting yourself. He used to tell the story of Rav Yitzchok Nevi'ezer. Rav Yitzchok Nevi'ezer was the father-in-law of Rav Blazer Gordon, who was the founder of Telzer Yeshiva. When he was in his 20s, got married, and he showed promise of being, had potential of being somebody great. So his father-in-law was a Rav in Ashishak, kept the couple for 5 years on his table. So his son-in-law could learn Torah without any bother of Parnas. After 5 years, son-in-law told his wife, go to your father and tell him, I got an offer of a Rabbonis. 5 years is up. We appreciate his support, but we have to go out now and make a living on our own. Right? Not fair to, you know, live off your father all this time. Things were different then. In any case, so the wife went to her father and she said, my husband wants your bracha to go and accept this rabbonis. We'd like to leave. The father turned white and he said, no, you have to stay another 5 years. If it's money, I'll give you more money. You can't leave. She went back to her husband. He said, look, I feel uncomfortable, but if your father is so important to him, we'll stay. So he stayed another 5 years. Now they had already little kids, and it's hard to support them. And he got a very prestigious offer of rabbonis. So he sent his wife again, ask your father for a bracha. I really want to take this rabbonis. Already 10 years, and we have already a big mishpacha, and it's hard for your father to support us. This time the mother-in-law was there too. So the wife said, you know, that's a call. It's already 10 years, and my husband has a good offer of rabbonis. We'd like your bracha. The mother-in-law said, you know, how long can we support them? The father said, I don't know who's supporting who, but I can't stand the way of my son-in-law's career. Give him a bracha, let them go. The day they left, the father-in-law died. And the mother-in-law understood then what he meant, I don't know who's supporting who. That schus that he had to support his son-in-law in learning kept him alive for 10 years. So you never know. Somebody once came to the Chofetz Chaim and offered to pay him the entire budget of his yeshiva. And the Chofetz Chaim refused it. The man said, something wrong with my money? He said, no. He said, but God could support my yeshiva. So why doesn't he? Because he wants to give the schus to Klal Yisrael. I can't let you monopolize that schus altogether. You give me a nice amount, but you have to leave room for other people. That's the Melech. That was the mistake of the Nesim. It wasn't just that they didn't rush in. They had a completely distorted view of what was going on over here. I mean, it was absurd to think God says, we got to build a Mishkan. Can anybody spare a dime? Like, you know, you need to build a Mishkan. I need some gold, silver, whatever. What do you mean? God could create it from nothing. He gave us all that money from the Mitzrim, from the Yam. He has to ask us back, create some more. But it's not for God's sake. He doesn't need our gold and silver. He could create it. It's for our sake. So what did the Nesim say? Whatever's missing, we'll make up the deficit. What kind of deficit? There's no deficit. God has no deficit. The whole purpose is for your sake. So if you don't give and you're waiting to make up the deficit, you don't understand what's going on. That was their sin. And therefore, Nesim with a Yud means those that carry others. Without the Yud, you can read it, Nisa'im, those that are carried by others. You think you're the carriers? You're the ones being carried. It's not that, what's it called, that you're the ones, we need your money to make up the deficit, you're carrying this project through. By giving, you're being carried. So the Yud was left out, that they should know, don't think you're the Nesiim, you're the carriers, you're the Nisa'im, you're the people who look like a carry, but you're the ones who actually are being carried.